There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go. Qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fall, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 449. August 11th, 2010, Stephen.
This F1 Movie Podcast brought to you by Cameron Karting. Cameron Karting offers CRG karts, engines and parts for all karts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California karters. Check them out. You know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen. On today's program, Fernando still believes. Will Senna ever get his big break? Liuzzi gunning for a podium at Spa? And a Motorsports Mondial special... an interview, or should I say, conversation with Christian Kleen, who some say will be back in Formula One next year. We never know, but...
maybe he's got connections with one of the new teams.
Well, I don't want to give away any new stuff that's going to be in the interview, but we shall see. Anyway, Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Wonderful, Mr. Rogers, and yourself?
I'm absolutely loving this kind of this weather, this time of year. Of course, the lack of Formula One activity is sort of a big bummer. But, you know, as you saw, I just brought in my collection of Autosport of the year 2000 to sort of compare what's going on today to 10 years ago. And just to put it all in perspective, it's pretty interesting stuff when you look at it. And I'll quickly go through these covers. June 8th, 2000. Jenson Button out. Williams F1 star will lose drive to Montoya. June 15th, the following week, Villeneuve, the only man Chewie fears. And of course, the year started with Mika Hakkinen. And of course, David Coulthard. Can he do it or can he not? Pretty exciting stuff. I mean, it's great. Fisichella is the dominant dude at Benetton. And Villeneuve shocks everybody with the BAR deal. And, of course, Ferrari in crisis on the July 27th issue, year 2000. There's always a crisis
almost,
at Ferrari.
Yeah, almost identical to this year,
exactly.
But that exact same time.
July 27th, the year 2000, the cover of Autosport was Ferrari in crisis. So, yes, what goes around comes around. But anyway, let's go right to Ferrari. Fernando believes he's got a 50-50 chance. I mean, mathematically he does. But right now, the only biggest problem is Red Bull is so fast. And my favorite stuff coming out of Mark Webber, we're unbeatable everywhere. We will dominate at any track. We will take over. It's really it's their championship to lose.
It really is at this point. The way they've been, you know, no one has ever – they really haven't been beaten other than by themselves all season.
Exactly.
You know, if they had not run into each other in Turkey, the other teams would be really looking up at them now instead of kind of going, uh-oh, here they come. And then just a couple of other not brilliant moves that they made. And then the reliability issues they had at the beginning of the season – if they come out of the gate reliable, the season would be over, pretty much.
I agree.
Because they would be 50 to 100 points ahead by now.
Absolutely. And with some of the silly mistakes between Mark Webber and Vettel, I think they're going to be able to settle down during this vacation period. And really, if they just attack, dominate the rest of the season, it's their championship.
Yeah. And basically what they need to do is dominate, both of them get out front, and then let those two guys race for it in the last two two races of the year.
Exactly. A quote from Mark Webber, we've had some small hiccups here and there because you need perfect weekends to win at this level. Of course, Sebastian and I are pushing each other pretty hard. To beat each other, you need to get everything right. So he's pretty pumped up, and he's my favorite part. It says he expects to win or be strong at Spa, Suzuka, and some of the other tracks. They're worried a little bit at Monza because of some of the straights.
Yeah, I would think that they might be a little bit nervous at Spa too, because that's really a flat-out track. That's one of those places where you really need good top end to be truly competitive. You know, you just look at what the Force Indias did last year when they got there, because they had good top end, they didn't have very good cornering, and they were able to kind of run with the big dogs to a certain degree. The only reason Kimi wins last year is because he had the Kerrs on board.
No Kerrs around much this year, but who knows? That could be back next year. But in the end, Mark Webber and Sebastian Vettel should be on the front row for all the final races.
Yeah, if they're not on the front, they're in the first two.
Well, they've been on the front of all of them.
No, they're going to set a couple records. The way it's going right now.
Exactly. So we'll see what happens. And of course, Ferrari is there to spoil their game. Fernando seems pretty confident. Montezemolo pumped up after their little summer recess. They're all having a lot of fun in the mountains. And unfortunately, they can't work on the car until the final week before we go back to racing in Spa. But still, I expect Ferrari to be pretty competitive in Spa.
Yeah. They've shown some pace increase. You know, the real wild card at this point now becomes McLaren as to whether or not they can get back into this game and be competitive. The last two races, they really have kind of fallen back.
Yeah. And the other big wild card for me, more than McLaren, is the tires. If there's a glitch, a weekend where all of a sudden Ferrari or Red Bull or McLaren can't get to grips with the tires.
Well, if I'm the other teams, I'm scared to death of the Red Bulls, the way Mark Webber was able to take those soft tires and go.
That was unbelievable.
Past half the race.
And I've said it.
And put distance between himself and the field. That was insane. He shouldn't have been able to do that.
These softs aren't as soft as we think they are.
You know, maybe somebody went and died, you know, painted a stripe on a couple of hards or something for them. I don't know. But it was really weird. Maybe somebody mislabeled a tire. He actually got a set of medium softs.
And I think even Jenson Button has done pretty well on some long runs. Rubens Barrichello has done well on some long runs on the Bridgestones. The Bridgestones are good this year for long runs.
Yeah, the softer tires have been more durable than we certainly expected. The fact that everybody jumped off those tires as soon as that safety car came out, except for Webber, and Webber was still able to put distance between himself and the field for another 20 laps was ridiculous.
Yeah, and the biggest problem with having to run the two tire compounds is people are pitting like the safety car just for the sake of getting to the second compound, not for strategic reasons or wore out tire reasons. They just want to get it done. That way they could just finish the race on that final tire.
Yeah, get the change in. And that's...
I don't think that's very exciting.
No, I think you've pretty much eliminated pit stops as a wild card in the races. We've had a couple of pit stops that have gotten a little crazy. You know, you go back a couple of weeks to Force India going, oh, wait a minute, that's not the right tire.
They had some issues there.
Yeah. But outside of that, you know, everybody's nailing 4-second stops.
Yeah.
It's been pretty solid.
It's true.
It's not, you know, the one thing with refueling you got is it was one more evolution that had to occur while the car was in the pits made an opportunity for a mistake.
But after Canada, everybody said, oh, that was so exciting. And it looked like that was going to become the template for the rest of the season. And they were going to mix it up at all the tracks with strange tire compounds. And none of that has materialized.
Well, they did it in Germany. And it didn't happen.
It didn't happen.
And you know why it didn't happen? It's the same reason that the first race of this year was completely boring. It's because everybody was playing it really conservatively and wasn't stepping out of their comfort zone to try to take advantage of the situation. Everybody was kind of not sure what was going on in Canada, so a couple of people tried this, a couple of people tried that, and some people it worked, some people it didn't. We got the Germany, same tire compound stretch, and everybody kind of knew what to do. And I think that kind of eliminated it as the wild card that it created in Canada.
Yeah, very true. Let's go and prepare for Spa mentally. Exactly, a little meditation. And of course, last year we had an exciting Spa. We had Vittorio Liuzzi, and of course,
Mr. Fisiche.
Bravo, bravo, bravo. Fantastic.
Basically going, okay, dude, you do well this race? We'll get you a driving Ferrari.
Well, it was pretty exciting when Fisichella finished second after battling it out with Ferrari's Kimi Raikkonen and starting from pole position. The first for... I mean, it was exciting.
Yeah, it was a really good run for Fizzy. Good race by the Force India cars there. And, you know, like I said a little bit earlier, that frankly... If Kimi doesn't have Kurs, he may not have been able to hold Fisichella off.
That's very possible. Fisichella did have a fantastic run, which got him the seat at Ferrari, basically.
Yeah, pretty much cemented. He was in the running for it, but I think that race cemented him as the new test driver.
And of course, beware for what you wish for.
Because the car that he got inherited was a pig.
Yeah, and I feel sorry for poor Fizzy. But it was very exciting Spa last year, and of course, Vittorio Liuzzi is hoping to emulate that with at least some good straight line speed.
Yeah, or you know, just having a good weekend. You know, Force India really kind of needs a good weekend. They haven't really put together anything in a couple of races, and you know, after the complete debacle of Germany, you know, they were a little bit better last week or in the last race in Hungary, but still, they were still making. Not very, you know, making little mistakes that they shouldn't be making. So let's hope they have a good race because I think their car is one of those ones that can compete on this track because they typically can get good straight line speed out of it.
Yes, Vittorio says, I think now some teams have improved a lot in drag and in top speed. So I don't think we will have the advantage of last year, but I still believe that we are in good shape to aim for a podium. So, well, I guess you could always aim for a podium.
Well, isn't that the goal when you step on the track is to be on the podium? No, because at the very least, ideally, you're aiming for the top step. You know, if you win in Atlanta, one of their two, hey.
Well, I think it's a bit unrealistic.
Again, well, Spa is also one of those tracks, too, that can kind of throw a curveball at you and get a little weird for a weekend. You know, we go back 2 years and we get the whole bit with the last minute rain and the
Hamilton and Raikkonen.
Yeah, the cutting of the chicane.
It was exciting.
Yeah, so, you know, the question mark I think comes for Spa is there going to be weather?
Well, there's always weather at Spa. It's the Ardennes Forest.
Yeah, a lot of it depends on, okay, what kind of weather are we looking at? Are we going to see some rain? Is it going to be drizzled? You know, is it going to, you know, completely throw the tire compounds out the window because we're going to get rain early in the race?
Well, Renault will have their F-duct in place
I
for
think
Spa.
Everybody who has one's going to be running it.
Well, this will be Renault's first F-duct introduction. So after Vitalis Petrov's great finish at Hockenheim, this is going to be exciting. I mean Hungary. Excuse me. It's going to be very exciting. And of course, Kubica needs to get back in the...
Back in his groove. Just a bad weekend for him.
It was a bad weekend. Out-qualified by his teammate. Hungary.
And then just
the pit thing, you know, was
the wheels kind of came off after that point for whatever reason.
I think he was.
I hate to say it, but he was kind of due for one of those kind of races where you know things just didn't go his way.
That's true because he's had some good luck.
Yeah.
And in Formula One, when things happen, they happen. Schumacher still the talk of the town. It doesn't stop. I mean, every perspective from every writer about the Schumi, about how he's been doing this kind of thing for years, and he continues. You know, I say drop it. The guy...
Let it go.
He's not the greatest sportsman in the world, but he's a great driver.
And we've seen, you know, it's not like he's not done it before. So it's not really new. We know he's got to be one of the most uber-competitive drivers that they've ever taken the grid. And he doesn't like to be passed. And especially from that particular individual, he's really not wanting to give up that place to him because, you know, yeah. Hey... He used to have to give up his place to me.
Exactly.
And I don't want to have to, you know.
That's it. Let's just blame Rubinho
being the guy trying to pass him. Frankly, if it had been Rosberg,
that's it.
Hey, you would have let him go. If it had been anybody but Rubens, David Coulthard or maybe Villeneuve. A couple of people that we could throw into that
list. Or Dana Hill. That would have been intolerable.
A couple of other lists that we could throw in there that would probably have gotten the same treatment. But
pretty much.
Buemi. But, he wouldn't have tried to run Buemi into the wall. We'll put it that way.
No, but Schumi's always great at Spa. I like it when he spanks people on the head. So it's going to be exciting. Let's move on to Bruno Senna. Is this guy ever going to get a big break? Are we going to see the Senna name in a good car? Or is he going to be stuck at HRT? Is HRT even going to be here? We've had Bernie already say one of these teams is going to be gone next year. Bernie's usually right.
Yeah, well, go back. He was half right with HRT because HRT wasn't getting to the grid until they got the help right there at the last minute. And, you know, he made the call on USF1, you know, like 2 weeks after they'd gotten their their spot on the grid. You know, that's a good question as to whether or not Senna can get himself a good seat. He's not outperforming his teammate at HRT in any dramatic way, which doesn't help him much. I can see someone looking to pick him up, but I can only see him really getting maybe halfway up the grid. Top three, top 14, probably not going to touch him. He's not showing enough to make himself worthwhile, you know. It's like, okay, it'd be great to have Senna's name, but, you know, I'll go get myself an unproven rookie who raced really well in GP2 last year for less than what I probably have to pay him and probably get pretty close to the same performance.
I agree. And the sad part is, I think, if you want to compare, like, Fernando at Minardi, I think the Minardi is a much better car, or was a much better car, than this HRT will ever dream of being.
Yeah, the HRT is, you know, I think one of the mistakes that HRT made was cutting loose Dallara so quickly, because Dallara could have done a lot to help them develop the car, because it was their design.
They can't even afford any development. Yamamoto is in because he's bringing the yen.
To basically keep them getting to races.
Exactly. I hate to say this, but I predict that HRT will not be on the grid next year.
Think they'll even make it to Brazil or to
Abu Dhabi? Possibly can. I think they have to make it to Brazil if you have Bruno Senna on your team.
True.
So that would be terrible. Quickly, speaking of 13th teams, new teams, HRT, Ross Brawn has come out saying, do we really need a 13th team? Do we need more red cones in front of us on the track?
Do we need more moving chicanes?
It's a valid point.
Yeah, it comes down to the FIA has decided that that's the number of cars that we can run. You know, I think Bernie wants to see more, because ultimately the more sponsors you have, you know, more cars you have, the more sponsors you have, the more money in the kitty for everyone, you know, for basically more money in the kitty for Bernie. But
Bernie said he'd be happy with 20 cars on the grid.
Yeah, and he would be. But he probably, you know, if they're pulling their weight, he's happy with 26.
And Ross Brawn says, I think teams can get cars together in a short period of time, as some new teams have demonstrated, but it's very difficult. It looks pretty marginal to me to get a team together in time for next year. And you know what?
Well, frankly,
Ross Brawn knows.
Yeah, and it comes down to the fact, too, that 13th team should already have been announced. You can't give them just the off season to put together a car.
I agree. I mean,
you know, if you're starting a team from scratch, really, you need 18 months to 2 years.
And that's why ART pulled out and said that, you know, you just can't really do this correctly.
No, there's
without the cash, the time, everything.
No, and it's got to be teams like ART or Pro Drive, or people like that who already have some of the needed infrastructure in place. You know, half the reason USF1 landed on its face is because they didn't have anything but a building.
Yeah, well,
so you got to go out and get a mill. You got to get someone to start.
The biggest problem with USF1 was clowns.
Well, they did. The guys they signed up, the guy running the show, didn't have the organizational skills to get it done.
Nasser Hamid could have provided more skills.
I think Nasser could have done a better job of getting that team up and running than
exactly
those who shall not be named.
Exactly. Quickly, before we go to break, Bernie Eccleston has come out saying Brazil is stinko, the worst circuit on the calendar. He says, in 72, I believed in Brazil. I brought Formula One there, but I can no longer be questioned by the teams about the worst circuit in the championship. The future depends on significant improvements. He says, it's an old circuit. It does need some help.
Yeah. And wasn't he saying the exact same things about Silverstone 2 years ago?
I understand. But he also, you know, let's not forget the Olympics are coming to Brazil. We've got the World Cup coming to Brazil. So there's going to be some infrastructure upgrades, and he's hoping that influx of activities, especially in the sports world, will bring some cash flow to Interlagos. And
frankly, the fact that those two are coming,
it could just drain.
Means that there will be no money to improve the circuit.
I'm trying to.
If you're bringing the Olympics, the sporting infrastructure that requires, the kind of cash that it takes to build the venues. I can't see there being money left over. You know, frankly, it's going to have to be a group of motorsports enthusiasts in Brazil who are going to have to give or put that money in if there are going to be improvements in the track.
Yeah, that's true. And these days, having the Olympics can be a big negative to the economy of that country.
It's a major strain. It's really good for, you know, it's good putting in the venues, but it's really tough on the tax base.
I agree.
Because, you know, they've basically got to foot the bill. Unless you can find somebody who's got the wherewithal to do it like Los Angeles did it in 80, where they basically got sponsors to fund like 85% of the improvements.
Yeah. No, it's usually a big losing money proposition.
Yeah. It's great for, you know, maybe tourism for the next 3 years, but it's, and then you get a big boost while they're there, and it's, you know, good for.
I think the one thing Interlagos has going for it is passion for motorsports, and with the Senna name still alive and well, and the history, there will be a race in Brazil, Steve.
Yeah, I can't see. Bernie's probably not going to be happy about it, but I don't think he can stop it unless he basically doesn't let them buy it.
I agree. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We've got another outstanding Motorsports Mondial coming for you. And, of course, special interview with Christian Kleen. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the Swami, Nasser Hamid.
Greetings and racing regards. Music coming up a little bit later today. Today we have victory for an F1 Weekly friend in Formula Renault UK and information and news from DTM, F3, IndyCars, and your favorite series, sir.
Lunasca.
Exactly. Plus we have a goodie bag of Uber domination through the pages of Formula One history under our segment called A Moment in Motorsports History. And talking of history, we also have an interview with Christian Kleen, which was recorded at Le Mans last year and went on vacation on honeymoon with David Tapia and Mrs. Tapia, but the interview is back here.
Better late than never.
Oh, absolutely. So my thanks to Mr. Tapia for taking care of this. Okay, we go to Snetterton in England, Formula Renault UK series. Very pleased to report our old friend from Buttonvillo days, Harry Tinknell, won the second race of the weekend at Snetterton. The opening race of the weekend was won by Oliver Milroy. And Harry Tinknell, if you remember, we spoke to him some years ago when he came here to test Formula BMW with Kazim Manzoor. So way to go, Tinks, and we look forward to him moving up, maybe in Formula 3 or GP3. So that should be fun. Now we go to Nürburgring in Germany. DTM Bruno Spengler of Canada was the winner over Mercedes teammates Paul di Resta and Gary Paffett. Ralf Schumacher was sixth in his Mercedes. And as I was telling you before I was demuted, that Gary Paffett was once upon a time offered a ride at Sauber Formula One team, and his manager advised him to ask for, you know, hang in there for the money he was asking. And then Mr. Sauber decided, okay, I can find somebody for less money. So that's the way it goes sometimes. In the championship, Spengler, who is a Quebecois like Jacques Villeneuve, he lives in France, leads Jamie Green 42 to 26 points. And he's a pretty decent driver. His name was linked with whenever they were going to have the third McLaren, you know, like a McLaren B team, or also with David Rich's Pro Drive. But I think he's going to spend a few more years in DTM now. Better to be in a winning situation than driving for HRT or MXT or...
That's for sure.
WINDSOR. You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. Okay, F3 Euro Series, they were also in action at Nürburgring. They move in tandem, F3 Euro Series, promoted by the same people as DTM. Winner in race one was Italian Eduardo Mortara over Belgian Lawrence Van Thur. Race 2 winner was Dr. Miguel's homeboy, Antonio Felix da Costa, with local boy Marco Wittmann second. And this was da Costa's first win, so congratulations to him. He's been on my radar for a couple of years. He was in Formula Renault, did a pretty good job. So let's hope we have another Formula One driver from Portugalistan soon. Some good news for the beleaguered series was delivered by the organizers, that the series will continue next season with the blessing of FIA, which is good because there was some talk that this may fold up because they've only been running with 12, 13 cars. It's a very important series. And then there was talk of it was going to merge with British series. But whether it's merged or not, I'm glad that F3 Euro Series is continuing.
Great.
VW Scirocco Cup. This was, I was very surprised, and you know, I'm glad for this kid. First international, anytime you win a race at Nürburgring is important. First international win for Indian driver Aditya Patel, who led the race from start to finish from pole. He is 22 years old and from Chennai, which was previously known as, in the days of the Raj and the Crown, Madras or Madras, which appears to be the epicenter of Indian motorsports. Naren Karthikeyan and Karan Chandok are also from Chennai, which is in the southern part of India. You know, I am very, very hopeful that when is the Indian Grand Prix next year?
Correct.
I am very, very hopeful that I will, if it's not on the first of the month or the last day of the month, I would like to attend that race. It's
well, right by next year, you'll probably get invited to that race.
Well, you know, funny you say that. A couple of years ago, I ran into, actually it was last year or 2 years ago at Barcelona, Vicky Chanduk, Karan Chanduk's dad, and I said, hey, you know, I'm almost a homeboy from the other side of the border. I would like to get an invitation. He says, give me your business card. So over the years, I've exchanged emails with him. But if the race is in like the middle of the month, I'm very, very positive I will go. I have a friend, a huge Formula One fan in New Delhi, and I chat with him quite a bit about motorsports. So it'll be nice to go and check out the inaugural Indian Grand Prix.
That would be exciting. Maybe I'll tag along with you.
You should. You should. It's a very historical place. It's a very big country, culturally very rich, and very rich in curry and chutney also, as you know. And my friend from San Diego, Mr. Robert Schwartz, he has also expressed an interest to go. So we'll see.
Sounds good.
Now we go to Snetterton and the British Touring Car Championship, which is, this track is owned by Dr. Jonathan Palmer's company. And last year I was given a guided and hybrid tour of the track by our Senior Vice President of European Theatre, Mr. Peter Brazier.
I think he's been promoted.
Oh, yeah. And the race was a case of see the UK in your Chevrolet, with Jason Plato winning first two races of the weekend and extending his championship lead to 24 points over Matt Neal. In qualifying, Alex McDowell became the youngest pole sitter at the age of 19 in the history of the series, so which is very impressive. Our congratulations to Master Alex. The third and final race of the weekend was won by Gordon Shedden in a Honda. You know, I've been thinking about, I have never been to a British F3 race, which is a very, very, this is a series I attend, I came from. I'm hoping next year I can probably attend a British F3 race. I would very much like to do.
I'll see what I can do.
Oh, yeah, you're going to tag along on this one, too?
I don't know, but we'll get you in.
Yeah. And they race at Brands Hatch, which circuit I like very much, and another circuit I like very much, which I've never been. Hint, hint to Mr. Brazier is Oulton Park or Oulton Park.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful track. Okay, British F3 at Truxton. Team Carlin took the top four slots in race one, with local chap James Collado winning over your homeboy, Jean-Éric Vanier. And this kid is really making some big news. This Francais is on a serious croissant roll, or a hot roll, and took his 10th and 11th win of the season in the other two races of the weekend. You know, previously they raced at Spa. They had three races. He won all of them. Very impressive. And we have an interview with him coming soon to a podcast near you. And this is the kid, Jean-Éric Vanier, who's replacing Brendan Hartley at World Series by Renault for Red Bull. What do you say? Red Bull Rouge Bull in Francais?
He caught me off guard.
Has to be Rouge.
Yeah, obviously.
What's Bull? Rouge Le Bull? Okay, I'll let you think.
Taureau.
There you go. Rouge Taureau.
Rouge.
Taureau Rouge, like Tetra Rouge. Anyhow, in F1 News, I was very pleased to hear this. Our Jens finished 10th in the London Triathlon, helping to raise money for Make-A-Wish Foundation. JB apparently has raised over £18,000, which is very nice and kind of the 2009 world champion.
Like, it's impressive that he finished 10th.
Yeah, he's
you know, he's going to be up against a bunch of professional athletes. It's like,
he's a professional athlete.
Yeah,
and world
but
champion,
I'm talking
even.
Like professional triathletes, and to be able to finish 10th. Pretty impressive.
It is pretty impressive.
Lotus team will give Malaysian teenager Nabil Jaffrey opportunity to drive their F1 car in straight line testing. Nabil is 16 years old with good karting credentials and competing in Formula BMW Asia this year. So
that's going to be pretty exciting for him. A lot of horsepower for the 16-year-old.
Yeah, you know, it's very impressive. And, of course, you have to support your own people. But, you know, these people need to be realistic, you know. Putting a 16-year-old...
I think that's why he's doing straight-line tests.
I think this is a subliminal straight-line test for Lotus for development purposes.
Yeah.
Well, it's you, and that way you get a couple a year, I think, don't you?
Yeah,
you get a few. But we wish everybody all the best.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if I was a 16-year-old, that'd be absolutely bonkers.
Yeah, get to drive an F1 car down a runway, just open it up, get it going as fast as you can. That'd just be a blast.
Yeah. Okay, next. McLaren Automotive will open their first showroom next year at One Hyde Park in Knightsbridge. Their new high-performance sports car, MP4-12C, will be launched in the spring of next year. I think Dr. Mark Farrington has apparently faxed his order already.
Of course.
Yeah.
From one of his holidays.
Yeah, exactly. And Mr. Jagger would like to remind you, if you have diamonds and tiaras, you get your kicks in Knightsbridge and not in Stepney. Do you know anything about Knightsbridge?
Is this where Jagger...
Yeah, people like him hang out.
Did the boogaloo?
Yeah. He can do a boogaloo anywhere. Okay, and now we get on board a westbound 747 with Captain Albert Hammond across the water as we like to see racing action in America. How about you, Mr. Rogers?
Love American racing.
Yep. Okay, first stop, Columbus, Ohio, and IndyCar action at Mid Ohio. Pole for Power and Penske Racing. Victory for Dario Franchitti with Power. Well, that is Will Power from Australia. And Castro, Will Power was second and Castro Neves was third. Impressive 8th place finish for Swiss Miss Simona Di Silvestro. She is really doing a very good job in her first year.
You know what? She has shown some pace.
Yeah, and she's this is a racing driver.
She's a professional.
Yeah.
The she finished ahead of Danica?
Pardon?
She finished ahead of Danica?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and her cousin is...
No, that's Natasha Gershnow. Her cousin is Sebastian Buemi.
Okay, I thought she had a cousin too.
Yeah, well, I'm sure she does, but it's not. I mean, it's not Sebastian Buemi.
No, I didn't think it was Buemi. I thought it was somebody else.
Yeah, I don't know. Could be Ramon Silvestro.
That's it.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, Indy Lights race was won by English driver Martin Plowman, his first of the series. Second was fellow Brit Dan Clark with Charlie Kimball from Ventura, California. Third, and Martin Plowman is a gentleman who I met, I think, in 2006 or 7 at the Auto Sport Show. And he was in car, I think he was just come out of karting. He was at one time supported by Toyota. And he was so polite. And I mean, just so polite that when he was talking to me, I swear, I mentioned this on the podcast once before, I was thinking, dude, you're so polite. What are you doing in motor racing? this is shark pool, you know. But I'm happy for him and wish him all the best. American Le Mans Series, first overall win for Mazda, courtesy of Chris Dyson. Close second was the Hycroft HPD, previously known as Acura, driven by your homeboy, Simon Pagenaud and David Brabham. And, you know, we interviewed him once here, and I've met him here a few times. Actually, we spoke to him when he was in IndyCars. And last year I ran into him at in the paddock of very close to the, I think it was the Luke Alphon Ventures racing team. And he looked at me and says, what are you doing here? I'm here to check out Le 24 Heures du Mans, baby. So we'll check up with him soon. There was another French guy, Tristan Gourmandy, I believe. I think he's back in Europe now. He was also in IndyCar racing. Now we go to your favorite series in the great racing track in the Finger Lakes. Watkins Glen, third successive win for Australian Marcus Ambrose in the nationwide race, the Zippo 200. Why are you laughing?
I love it. Zippo 200. Yeah, absolutely. At least it's associated with cigarettes.
Yeah exactly. Joey Logano was second. Nelsinho Piquet was seventh in his debut in the nationwide series. Who? Nelsinho Piquet Jr.
Who is this guy?
This guy was very good in British F3. He won races in GP2. And then he finished second in Germany in a Formula One race.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that must have been years ago.
Yeah. And then, you know, but he, you know, once he was racing in the night and he was blinded by the light. By GE Light, you know, and then he spun. Wow.
His future was so bright, he needed shades, but he forgot to wear them.
Yeah, exactly. Flavio had them on, his and Pat Simmons too. But, you know, you know what?
At least he's in a car racing, or is it a truck?
That was a car race.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I get all these NASCAR things mixed up. Well, that's good. And he's in there with Villeneuve. And that's sort of interesting. You've got a NASCAR race with a Piquet and a Villeneuve.
Yeah, exactly.
What is this world?
Watkins Glen.
Yeah.
It's just like 1980 US Grand Prix.
Wow.
Yeah, amazing. Back to the future. Okay. This was interesting. The Grand-Am race at the Glen was won by Scott, hi to my family, Pruitt, and Memo Rojas of Ganassi Racing. Record equaling seventh win of the season. Very impressive. And they now lead the championship by 26 points with two races remaining. And this is where it gets interesting. Ganassi team won past weekend in NASCAR, IndyCars, and Grand-Am. Way to go, Chipster.
Okay, and you, Montoya.
Can't forget the cup race.
Yep. Howdy, howdy, howdy.
He was saving it
I
for
was
last.
Saving the best for the last. The cup race.
Boy.
The sprint cup race. Bells were ringing.
And he's called Mr. Big now.
Yeah, Monty Mayhem. One news report called it the three-year itch because it's been 3 years since he won a race. So anyway, Monty Mayhem, thank you, Mr. Favre, for pointing that out. Juan Pablo Montoya wins his first cup race since his triumph at Sears Point in 2007. Kurt Busch was second and Marcus Ambrose third. So very impressive for Marcus to be winning one race and third in the other. And A.J. Allmendinger was fourth.
Good for him.
Yeah. And Montoya, man, he's been very, very impressive at oval races. And, you know, before the show, Mr. Fab made a point. He had not won an oval, but he has been on pole. And he has been running very competitive. And
his two wins are on road courses. What does that tell you?
That he's pretty good on road courses, boy.
Exactly. But, you know, I know he loves the hot dogs and that American lifestyle, so.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah. You know, this past weekend I spent the whole weekend doing nothing but reading racing magazines. And I've been going through a lot of World Magazine, most of them, when he was in Formula One. Like, every magazine, the cover story is mega quick Montoya. We're going to look. Peter Windsor looks into this. Somebody else, Ellen Henry, talks to him. The whole world is talking to Montoya. Why he's so quick.
And especially when he first came out driving for Williams, attacking Schumacher. and he showed a certain level of machismo.
Well, one of the magazines you gave to Naz today talks about him taking away Button's seat.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and Clark Rogers has brought me a big stack of Autosport magazines, mostly from 2000, a lot of Nando here. And as I mentioned, this is even a 2000 issue, and there is a news item that Ferrari may sign a 19-year-old Formula 3000 winner to a Formula One contract. Name?
Fernando Alonso, el muy hombre macho de España. But see, now, you know, I still think he's Mr. Macho. I know he's a whiny, but we'll move on. I like him.
Did you say he's a whiny?
He does whine a lot.
I don't have a problem with whining, but I just didn't like that hand me a win.
Wait a minute. That's the team telling him what to do.
Yeah.
You know, if you know, it's not his fault that Massa wants to scoot over and let him go by. I can't blame Fernando for getting that win.
So who are you blaming, Luca Baldessari?
No, I'm blaming Felipe Massa. He should have stayed on track and won the race like a man. Because these people called him a traitor.
Yeah, but you know, once you anyway, Massa is a nice guy. That's his problem.
I not only that, but he's been with Ferrari for a long time, and he knows his place.
And the thing is, you know, if you do something like this, then what happens? And you know, other things like the Piquet thing.
Yeah.
Other thing, people think he's going to do the same here. So it's one of those things you're screwed if you do.
Fernando wasn't involved with the Piquet thing.
No.
No. Gee. How could he have been?
I think he has hired a. Like a Brazilian maid to shine that Singapore trophy every week, and he says only when the sun, after the sun goes down. Anyway, we have to
let's move on. We've got some good stuff here coming up.
Okay, now it's time for a moment in motorsports history. You know, I spend like most people most of the day at work, and even though I'm supposed to do my job, which I do. The mind is on motor racing, as it has been since January 1973. So I get these flashes of ideas, you know, the tsunami of trickles in, and then I said, let's write a story.
That's
on
why
this.
You make the big bucks here at F1
Weekly. Oh, I have
it's
so.
It's for those synapses firing.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, this is, you know, we're talking about how Michael Schumacher had such a dominating run with Ferrari. So I said, let's see when this Uber domination started in Formula One. It was not the first time, but it was obviously the longest and very in deep, as you know. So anyway, so I just a few of these from seasons gone by. 1952, Alberto Ascari of Italy in a Ferrari wins 6 of the last 8 races of the season. He did not take part in the opening race of the season, the Swiss Grand Prix, and retired in the second round of the championship, which in that season was the Indy 500. Okay? 1960, Black Jack Brabham of Australia, wins 5 races in a row, starting with the Dutch Grand Prix and ending with the Portuguese Grand Prix, also winning in Belgium, France, and Britain in between. This helped him seal his second consecutive world championship on board a rear-engine Cooper Climax from Coventry. You know, some years ago, I took the train from Heathrow to Birmingham to attend the Autosport show. And I kid you not, nighttime, the train stopped at Coventry Station, which is like the British Maranello, basically.
Chills.
And I had chills like you won't believe.
Frisson.
Yeah, frisson. I mean, this is a serious Cooper Coventry, man. I mean, come on.
It's the pinnacle.
Exactly. 1963, all 10, this is very, very impressive.
More Uber
competitiveness. Oh, yeah, very, very, especially for a country that size of less than California. All 10 championship races won by British drivers. Partners in crime were Graham Hill, John Surtees, and Jim Clark, who won 7 of the 10 races and picked up the first of his 2 championships, making Her Majesty stay at Balmoral Castle a wee bit better. That's one of our big castles in Scotland.
Really?
I thought you've been invited there for some tea and
well, you know,
fondue.
I can't divulge everything.
Oh, okay. You know, the Queen thing, the favorite story I would always have is when that guy commoner walked into her bedroom. Actually, you know, he went there, sat on her bed, and then she came out, what's going on here, right? So around that same time was the British Grand Prix, and this Renault manager or some guy was quoted as saying that he was denied entry into the Renault pit. So he said, yeah, it's easier to get into the Buckingham Palace than to my own pit. So just, you know, one of those sidebars. 1965, this time 9 of the 10 races were won by British drivers. Lone exception, very historical implications, was the season finale in Mexico City, where three different entities celebrated their maiden win. Richie Ginther, the driver, turned out to be his first and only win. Tire manufacturer Goodyear and a motorcycle manufacturer by the name of Honda. Very, very impressive. Man of the season was Jim Clark, who won 6 of the 10 races, 5 of them in a row, and also collected his second and final championship. Now we come to 1979. Haul your horses.
He's off!
He's haul your horses, I said. A season of consecutive wins. Jacques Lafitte and Aligier won the first two races of the season in Argentina and Brazil, which I remember very well. Gilles Villeneuve and a Ferrari won the next two, which I also remember very well, in South Africa and USA at Long Beach. Belgium and Monaco were won back-to-back by Jody Scheckter in the other Ferrari. Then Jonesy Boy from Melbourne, Australia, that would be Alan Jones, won 3 in a row, Germany, Austria, Holland for Frank Williams and Patrick Head. But nothing, and I repeat, nothing. No back-to-back wins, not 3 in a row would match what happened for second place at Dijon-Prenois 1979. Take it over, Clark.
He's off! He's back again! That's incredible!
Yes, sir, that is freaking incredible.
It still gets good, huh?
Oh,
you gotta like YouTube that every day.
I do a lot of that, even at work, you know, especially after 3 o'clock.
Just for inspiration.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Actually, you know, funny you mentioned this. There is a YouTube of Senna passing Mika Hakkinen when Hakkinen was in a Lotus at Spa. And it's intense. It's Senna, it's Spa. But, you know, at one after the Rouge, I think they're going up to Redion, whatever it is called, straight line. I mean, there are sparks coming from Mika Hakkinen's car, and they were side by side. Oh, chills, man. Look at this. I mean, it's incredible. Check it out, folks. It's Mika Hakkinen, Ayrton Senna at Spa. So it probably was 1991. It's fantastic. And finally, talking of Senna, 1988, the final year of Turbo Era and complete and utter domination by two very fast friends at McLaren Honda, two-time world champion and Le Professeur, Alain Prost, and his new teammate, then new teammate, Ayrton Senna. Between them, they won 15 of the 16 races. Monza was the only miss where Jean-Louis Schlesser became the onion in burger. If you know what I mean. I was watching this race with my friend. I just could not believe what happened. But I was happy it was a Ferrari 1-2. And, you know, talking about Alain Prost and Ayrton Senna, remember when they opened the new shorter version of Nürburgring? I think this was 1983. They held a first race. There was an invitational Mercedes cars, and they invited all world champions,
right,
this and that, and Senna won in the rain. And many, many years later, I met a guy, a German guy. We used to work together, and he told me he was at that race, and it was raining cats and dogs. And then I said, no wonder Ayrton Senna won, because then he was very young and going against all these. The interesting thing about this race is, of course, Mercedes invited all these drivers, and Alain Prost's flight into Stuttgart was, I believe it was Stuttgart, coming in an hour or two before Senna's flight. So they asked him, that other driver is coming, can you give him a ride? Ayrton Senna is his name.
That's funny.
Yeah, I would love to talk to Prost about this.
You will.
If I get an audience with him. Okay, finally, since we did not have music at the start, we're going to have music now. Now we come to our What's in Your iPod? Thanks to our Fondue Underground investigators in Switzerland, we can now bring you exclusively on F1 Weekly what Herr Michael Schumacher has been listening since his Hungarian Grand Prix heroics.
It's time, so sad. Why can't we talk it over? Oh, it seems to me the siren seems to be the hardest word.
Nasser, thanks for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial with some goodie bags.
Yes, and my thanks to Mr. Elton John.
He's a fine pianist.
What? You mean pianist?
Pianist.
Oh, wow.
So there you have it. Nasser, thank you again.
Welcome. Thank you.
Stay tuned for the interview.
With?
Christian Kleen. After this brief break.
F1Weekly.com would like to thank our sponsor, San Jose Label Inc. San Jose Label is a custom manufacturer of labels that makes a variety of products. 1-4 color process labels, alphanumeric barcoding and UPC labels, blank labels, serialized asset tags, hazardous labels, bumper stickers, pin feed, static cling, hot stamp labels, and many others. Please go to www.sanjoselabel.com for info, samples requests, and graphic design. Or you can call to telephone 408-436-8221. San Jose Label is the one-stop shop for all your labeling needs.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we call it, the Double M Special, an interview with Christian Kleen. Nasser, please introduce this fine young man.
Yes. This conversation was recorded at Le Mans last year when he was competing with Peugeot. And Christian Kleen is a 27-year-old driver from Austria. His achievements include winning the Formula Renault Germany Championship in 2002, the 2003 Masters of Formula 3, and second place in the 2003 F3 Euro Series behind Ryan Briscoe, who is now racing in IndyCars these days. Christian Kleen was also part, and I would say a victim, of Red Bull Speed through the System Driver Development Program. Other victims include Liuzzi and Scott Speed, and quite a few actually these days. Last year, Christian Kleen was a test driver for Sauber BMW, and this year he has the same role for HRT. So I wish him all the best in his racing career. He was offered a ride in America in Champ Cars by Red Bull, but he wants to be in Formula One, so that's where he's staying. So we wish him all the best, and I thank him, danke schön, for his time.
Okay, I'm at Le Mans with Christian Kleen, all the way from Austria. Christian, thank you for your time. How are you today?
I'm very good today. Well, obviously today is a more quiet day, a lot of PR things to do and driver's parade. But looking forward to getting the car tomorrow.
Talking of PR, do you like doing PR stuff and dealing with guys like me?
It's a part of the job. I'm here to drive the car, that's the main thing. But it's a part of the job, so there's no problem about it.
Thank you. Talking of driving the car, your team is on pole position. What will it take to end Audi's domination of this?
Well, Peugeot is on pole position. Our car is on position 3. But, you know, it's not as important to be on pole or P3 for this long race. You know, really counts in the race. It's such a long race. It's good to start from the front, but it's not necessary.
Now, last year when you came into endurance racing, long-distance racing, what was the biggest adjustment, because you're used to single-seaters, that you had to adapt to?
Well, obviously the cars are a bit different, especially around Le Mans. The track is quite tricky. It's very long, so you have to get used to it. And then you spend quite a long time in the car. For example, last year, longest time I was sitting in the car was 3 hours 20, and that's really, you can really tell that's endurance racing. And it's like the competition was last year and will be this year. It was flat out in the car, 100% all the way through, and it's very challenging.
Now, you have, if the fame and fortune was the same, let's say sports car racing was as famous as Formula One and money was the same, which one would you prefer and what do you enjoy more?
In terms of racing a Formula One car, you know, that's great. Fastest cars in the world, and the technique of the cars is just amazing. So when you sit in a car, it's such a perfect, nice feeling. In Le Mans, it's a bit different. The cars are great fun to drive. The track is amazing. But the better thing is the atmosphere, the amount of people around here is just much bigger than a Formula One race. If you look at the crowd, last year we were nearly 250,000 people here. The good thing is the people, the fans, they get really close to the cars, to the drivers. And this atmosphere I like a lot.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe you were leading the Petit Le Mans last year, closing stages, and then Alan McNish surprised you. How disappointing was that?
it was very disappointing. To be honest, it was 10 hours of battle between Audi and us. It was very close. I was not happy because we went on medium tires in the end, and the Audi car McNish went on soft tires, so I couldn't really battle with him in the last hour. That was really, yeah, that upset us and that cost us the win in the end.
I was watching the race in California, and I just could not believe, you know, when a driver goes through that big of a disappointment, how long does it take to get over it?
It's over quickly. Depends how really disappointed you are. You know, in the end, the fact is we knew we were on the wrong tires in the end. That was a mistake of us. But yeah, you know, that's motorsport. That can happen. We were still on the podium. We still had a taste of the champagne, so it was not too bad.
And going back to Formula One, obviously I love Formula One. What was that experience like for you?
Sorry, but
Formula One experience. What was? How did you enjoy that?
Well, very good. Well, I'm still in Formula One as test and reserve driver at BMW, so I'm still at all the races. And also, my target is to get back to Formula One cockpit, and that's why I'm doing sports car this year beside Formula One to just still do some racing and in high level competition. And otherwise, Formula One is the top of motorsport, so. You like to race there, obviously.
Your homeboy and Peugeot teammate Alex Wurz is trying to get a team. Will he give you a job?
Depends. Depends if his team will be racing there. If yes, I will ask him.
Okay. Now, when you were with Red Bull, if I understand correctly, they wanted you to go to Champ Car Racing or racing in the U.S., and you were not interested, and I guess because of that, they dropped you. Looking back, do you think that was the right stand you took?
They gave me an opportunity to race in Champ Car, but my goal at that time was still, to be in Formula One and to race in Formula One. Then I went to Honda as a test and reserve driver, and this decision was right. I'm still in Formula One now and the top level of sports car with Peugeot, so I'm very happy at the moment.
What are the chances of you replacing Heidfeld? No politically correct answer, please.
You have to ask Dr. Mario Tyson.
Okay, but is that the only team that you are looking at to becoming a driver, or are you looking at some other options too?
Well, at the moment, I'm very happy at BMW. I'm very involved in the team, and the best thing for me would be to race with BMW next year. We have to see. It's still early. At the moment, there's a lot of political things going on in Formula One, so drivers' issue. We're not talking about that at the moment. Well, of course, obviously, you keep your eyes open and check if there are some free seats available for next year.
Three countries in Europe, England, France, Italy, tremendous racing passion, but your country has a huge contribution to motor racing, Jochen Rindt, Niki Lauda, Gerhard Berger, now you. When you were coming through the system, did you have help from other Austrian drivers apart from Red Bull program?
No, not at all. It's actually strange. We have a great history of motorsport in Austria. We had two racetracks, now not anymore. But it's a great history. But I made my own way all the way up through karting, actually. Then I got good support from Red Bull all the way up until Formula One. So, Red Bull as an Austrian company helped me a lot in that case, yes.
Dr. Helmut Marko, I know him as a racing fan from his racing days. He has a pretty tough reputation as a tough guy. How was your experience dealing with him?
Yeah, he's a very tough guy, yes, definitely.
Okay. Now, if I understand correctly, you also raced in Formula BMW against Timo Glock. How was that experience in Formula BMW, and what's your take on Timo Glock, both as a driver and person?
Well, Timo is a good friend of mine, and we raced together in Formula BMW, then Formula 3, then 2004 in Formula 1, so I know him since a long time. Sometimes he goes skiing in the winter, so as a person I like him a lot, and I also think he's doing a good job in the team. Even this year, improved again, and if he gets the right car, he shows that he can go for the podium.
Okay. And how about telling our listeners, we have listeners all over the world, a little bit about Christian Kleen, the person, not the driver, what kind of music you like, where do you live, what do you like to do? Just some brief personal stuff, not too personal.
Well, in winter time, I like to be at home in the Austrian mountains. I do a lot of skiing up there. You know, like to hang out with friends if I'm at home. Obviously, motorsport, you're traveling a lot, so that's very rare.
We do a program from California. Have you been to the United? I mean, you were at Indianapolis, I assume. Have you traveled to other places in the U.S.?
Yes. Well, I was in Florida a couple of times. I was in L.A. once, but only 3 days. That was not enough to see the whole city.
Okay. Thank you very much. All the best.
Christian Kleen, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. And now let's go right to the wrap-up with the forum updates.
This week's forum updates are kind of a combo because we missed last week, so we got basically two for one. We'll start with, this week, the forums have prepared for the summer break with a welcome rise in activity, including lively debate about whether Michael Schumacher is a homicidal maniac or just past his sell-by date, whether Fernando is humiliating Felipe, and the continuing Red Bull driver favoritism and flexible wing-to-floor controversies. The antics at the Hungaroring generated a lot of well-informed discussion about safe and unsafe pit releases. It also great to see Desiree posting again. We knew we were in for a lean period of on-track racing when Ye resurrected the beans thread after 3 month break, joyously altering his fellow. I'm guessing this is bean fans because I really can't read. Lyco Copper Cium Favor Files to Heinz 1 kilogram fridge jars of baked beans. The holiday period has also generated interesting threads about the planned USGP venue in Texas, including photographs of the site taken last week, and about classic motorsports festivals around the world, such as the Legends of Motorsport at Mont-Tremblant and the Chelomonlie Pageant of Power. I think I got that first part wrong, but we're looking forward to hearing how Steve enunciates those. See? Got it. Recently, birthday greetings have been sent to forum members Lap Traffic, Jay Caruso, and of course, David Tapia. Come and join the forums. You know you want to. And on to this week's supplemental. In the Handing Out Midseason Awards thread, forum members have posted creative versions of Autosmart's own rather dull list. While in the Who Has Done Something Racing, we learn the fellow posters have driven at Laguna Seca, Silverstone, Brands Hatch, Riverside, Lime Rock, Estoril, just to name a few. There have been unanimous negative comments about the TV trailer for the U.S. version of Top Gear, with regrets that Jeremy Clarkson would be too politically incorrect ever to be broadcastable over here. Meanwhile, now we're well into the summer break, the diversity and sheer wackiness of threads on the forum has reached an almost off-season proportions. For example, Ye has kindly provided us with a handy cyber-stalking guide to female sports celebrities, and Frank Duckelson has announced that the British company has converted a VW Beetle to run on methane derived from human excrement, and some unfathomable reasons he has compared this achievement to building of a World War II Spitfire. So if you're going quietly demented, waiting for Spa, come and join the rest of us on the forum who are also apparently becoming slightly demented. Thank you, Mark. We appreciate it.
Well, that was a lot of forum.
Well, the forums, this is one of those times of the year where the forum kind of explodes because it's kind of like the only source of Formula One for 3 weeks.
Okay, thank you, Stephen. We've got a couple of interesting emails. The first one is from Marcelo Javier. And he writes, "Hi guys, I've discovered your podcast after the last Team Orders episode in Germany, looking for F1 contents on the internet. And I can tell you that this is the only good thing that I can take from it. Your podcasts are great. During F1 holiday break, I would like to propose a subject I sent as a title. Who was the last macho in Formula One? Schumi? Alonso? Hakkinen? Raikkonen? Hamilton? My point is, we miss the old times, the real drivers. My last hope was Alonso, but after the 2007 whining spy episode that he was in, Singapore, a gate, Team Orders, I feel obliged to give up.
I guess we need real drivers fighting with their cars like during the 80s and 90s. Can we say we miss real champions like the ones in the last or in the past? I'm sure you could sell more hats if you change your approach to something similar. Cheers. Keep up the good work. Great stuff. Thank you. And that's a good question. Who was the last macho in Formula One for you, Nasser?
Well, I would say in terms of macho, I'm equaling it to being a hustler. That has to be Nigel Mansell.
Yeah, I think part of the reason you don't have guys who are quite as macho, one, you've got sponsorships, which kind of force the guys to mellow. And two, it's really hard to kill yourself in a Formula One car anymore. So you don't have to be quite so, you know, completely mildly insane to get into a car.
And Montoya was pretty macho, talked himself out of motor racing, Formula One.
He was pretty macho and took out half the field at Indianapolis. Yeah.
But I got to tell you, you know, when I was talking to, and I have to agree on this, with, what's his name from Brazil, Moreno, Roberto Moreno, he said to me that Montoya was one of the most naturally gifted racing talent he has ever seen in his life. And, you know, frankly speaking, after saying that, this was one guy who really excited me. Because, you know, he would go and stick it to people. That was good. And then we had Mr. Raikkonen, who just went to sleep and
well, he might have been bitten by the tsetse fly.
Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, great question. Thanks for the email. One more email, because we had some good ones, and we don't get great emails all the time, but these were good. And this one is from Michael Caldwell from the UK. Dear sirs, I listen to the podcast here in Edinburgh and enjoy it very much. I find it supplements the BBC's coverage very nicely. You bring a very valuable historical and personal touch to my understanding of F1. The BBC's coverage often misses out that element, but I guess they don't have time on race day. Please find an attached photograph of my son Christopher next to Jackie Stewart's Tyrrell 003 at the Royal Museum of Scotland, Edinburgh. I believe this is the most successful chassis in the history of the sport. Regards, Michael Caldwell. And, you know, we're going to post that picture of his son
Definitely.
In front of that chassis on the front page, probably in a couple of days.
Yes.
There you have it. Thanks, Michael. We do appreciate it, especially when somebody links us with the BBC. Because I know for Nasser, the BBC is the top gun.
It's the Big Bertha.
It is the Big Bertha. Yeah.
And that's nice to hear from somebody from Britain, you know.
Absolutely. You know, that's the of motor racing.
I can only speak for myself. I sure can use a nice sling and arrow once in a while.
Well, you get enough of those from me.
Yeah.
When we start freaking out. Anyway, thank you, Michael. Quickly, I want to remind everybody about San Francisco Formula One Group. Go to their website, sff1.com, and they're always doing something around the Bay Area.
Well, this was a long day. I thought you said USF1.
No. That's a copyright. I couldn't say that. Only Peter Windsor can say that, coming up in his next book.
Oh, yeah, and talking about Peter Windsor, you probably saw that, right?
Yeah, he's
in the GPWeek.com.
Grand Prix Week.
He's going to spill the beans on Kenny now.
It's awfully close to Grand Prix Weekly.
Yeah.
I might have to give them a call.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We'll call the legal department and get them right on that.
Yeah.
Ask Peter Windsor if he can get us a sponsor from Argentina.
There you go. I'll have him call the president of Argentina.
Yeah, exactly.
I heard they're really close.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. She's looking for him.
Okay. Okay, enough of that. But it should be intriguing what Peter Windsor has to say next week on Grand Prix Week. You think? Maybe not.
Not really.
Because more than likely, he's probably not going to say much.
I think he's just going to cover his bouteille.
Yeah, he was part of the, you know, the scam de pour.
I think so, too. I mean, I know he's going to scream bloody murder, and he was innocent and scammed himself.
Yeah.
But it was him I saw with the president in Argentina. It was him accepting the check.
Yeah.
And he's a fairly experienced guy.
He should know better.
He should know better. So there you have it. Thank you, Nasser, for that little editorial.
Welcome.
Cameron Karting is proud to organize and support the 2010 Red Line Oil Karting Championship. Cameron Karting offers CRG carts, engines, and parts for all carts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California carters. For more information, just contact CameronKarting.com. I want to mention our MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter sites. Just do a search for F1 Weekly and add us as a friend. And if you're spam, don't add us.
If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@f1weekly.com. Couldn't get that.
Okay, got a little stuck on that.
Yeah, I got a little stuck on the f1weekly.com, but there you have it. We can promote your product, and Nasser has that lovely voice. So I don't know. It should be good. Anyway, I want to thank everybody who helps put this show together. Toby Dawes, David Tapia, Steve Falb, Nasser Hamid, and me.
And David Tapia, too.
The executive producer. Yeah. Did I not mention David Tapia?
No, you have to mention him twice.
Yeah. But you want me to mention him twice.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous, Nasser. Good night.
Good night.
Bye.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. Thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, recording and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.